Feeling a little Carter breeze blowing through the west wing. I mean, my God, not to belabor something that's wholly trivial, but this business of backing down on the night he wanted to give a speech?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what is that. I mean, it's so ridiculous. I just thought, oh, my God.
Gutless.
Yeah, but but totally over the top gutless, though. You see what I'm saying? It was so godless, I was taken aback by it. That's what I'm saying.
It wasn't your usual everyday Obama street gutless. This was a special brand of it.
It was some Gone with the Wind type of gutless. You understand what I'm saying? Took me back there. I was like, good Jesus. What's going on, you know?
Toaster for Gone with the Wind reference.
Listen, it just had the feel about it, and it's just like, dude. What are you doing? Where is Dave Chappelle, Black Bush? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no kidding. Has anybody seen him alive lately?
Yeah, he's touring. He's doing some sort of tour with some other crazy-ass, what is that one comedian? Damn it. Just a couple of really funny guys. They were doing this. They're doing this tour. They're actually playing at the Shore Amphitheater or somewhere out here in California, so... There, he's around.
No, I'm just glad to know that. I mean, well.
Yeah, but I don't really know. I don't know what to think of Obama at this point. And it's, I mean, what do we have? We have a year and what?
Yeah, and see, I don't want to be a big baby about this. All this, I'm not going to say. You know, I'm done for. I'm done. I'm done. Because I'm too much of a political grown up for that.
But
I got no problem saying, yeah, if nothing else, I'll send a damn message in the primary. That's May of 2012.
Right.
And he will receive, you know, he'll get the nomination in West Virginia because he'll be the only one on the ballot.
Well, I do think that, you know, the one bright spot is that you're starting to see some, not pushback, but some going over his head, because the New York Times, they've been hitting some hard-ass editorials recently. Have you noticed?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. You know, this whole sort of resentment of the poor, that editorial was on hit. They went after the whole CEOs getting more pay than what the fuck they pay in taxes.
That was a mind-boggling little statistic, wasn't it?
Hello. I was just like, oh, wow. And so the New York Times, you know, is sort of, and the one headline they had today was, oh, my God, grow up. They were talking about this sort of squabbling with the speech business.
Yeah.
So he will say he will back down against Boehner and compete with the football game? Hello, what the fuck? Why would you be competing with the football game? You see what I'm saying?
At this point, I'm watching the game.
Well, exactly. And so that's what I'm saying. Oh, anyway.
But see, that the other side of this is that the PR arm of the White House, Sandra, and I don't want to take up too much of your time if you got to go, this PR arm is working hard. This report out that says the White House has a new thing called We the People program. Anyone with an idea or a cause can go to the White House website, make a public pitch for support. If the idea gets 5,000 backers in 30 days, said White House spokeswoman Sandra Abravaya, there we go, a working group of policy officials will respond. Well, okay, sure. I mean, because you know what? We can have I guarantee you, if this news goes out, there can be a 5,000 signature end mountaintop removal yesterday petition there 3 days from now, or 3 days from whenever it goes live. Anybody think that that's going to happen, though? How about a 5,000 petition? How about a 5,000 or 50,000 signature petition saying, reconsider these smog regulations at the peril of your presidency?
I heard some of David's call, and he was suggesting that what people don't care enough about the environment
aren't. He's suggesting these issues aren't real to people because it hasn't become painful for people.
I guess, but, you know, maybe because I'm in California and, you know, the smog was, that shit was real. It was horrific for decades until it wasn't. And people don't want to go back, you understand? When you get clear, when you're able to breathe and shit, you kind of like that. So I guess if it's abstract only in the form of that it's a policy that people don't really understand, but the reality of clean air is everyone wants that, right?
Well, yeah, that's something that my good friend Vernon Haltom often says. As a person who breathes air and drinks water, I believe, you know, and that's what it boils down to. We are people who drink water and breathe air.
Okay, so it doesn't come down to him being back caving. It comes down to him making a choice, because he could get on the TV and say, to explain to people, we need to increase the air quality standards because X amount of people won't die and we all want clean air. I mean, that's pretty simple to announce at your podium. And I know, as David said, he may have to do it 12,000 times. But, yeah, oh, well, it is an argument that he can win. This is the thing.
Yeah, that's where I get lost, Sandra. It's
right.
Not like this is a tough argument to make.
Right.
You know, my fellow American somewhere out there tonight is an American who will die if these regulations do not go forward.
Right.
And
right.
There is not one single corporate share dividend worth a human life, and there's not a million of them either.
But once again, I think it was on Sam Cedar Show today where he played a part of a speech of Roosevelt that I hadn't heard before, but Roosevelt was making fun, just hooping it up about the dumbass Republicans and how they want to take care of Social Security and everything for you. I got to find this speech. And the man was just, he was laying the Republicans out to waste.
And that wasn't the same as the I welcome their hatred speech,
no,
was
no,
it?
No, this was something different. He was just talking about... Just
no, he sat there. Now, we're talking about a man who couldn't even walk.
No, but he...
And he sat there in that chair, and he needled their asses.
I was like, oh, my God, just to hear it. And so the problem with Obama is that there is no enemy for him, you see? He can't look at things in that way, whereas a Roosevelt didn't have no problem saying, you know what, people... The American people, these people over here, they want to fuck you up, basically.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you just got some email in from Renee Louise.
Mm.
She's listening live. Mostly she listens in delay, but she wanted to get a question to you. She said, I'm wondering if you might be able to ask Sandra if she knows anything about the major foreclosures I've been hearing about that are supposedly going to happen, I believe, around the end of next month, something like $2 trillion in defaults that are supposed to go down in Europe.
Yeah,
the result of which is most likely to be a global depression?
Yeah, no, listen, I also heard other people talking about that madness, and I don't mean, you know, just any other people. I mean like Rubini or what is it, Dr. Doom? And, you know, there's another, yeah, I heard something about that, and I think that what they're talking about are those, you know, my favorite thing, those credit default swaps,
right.
Derivatives, the bet. This is the reason why they keep propping up Greece. You know, you sit there, you think, well, why don't you just let this go? And then you find out the background, which is all these credit default swaps. And I think that's what's the woman you talked about?
That
sent in the question?
Oh, Renee Louise, yeah.
Renee, yeah, I think that's what she is referring to. Now, I don't know of anything definitive, but I've also heard that there's some things that are due real soon in Europe that they can't manage. So I don't know. I was looking at the state of Italy, just politically, it's unraveling. You know, Berlusconi is sort of, he can't hold it together. But the banks, yeah. No, I mean, a lot of people are thinking that something real bad is going to happen in the fall.
Well,
I mean, no, really bad. Remember, always keep in mind that all the debt was transferred from the banks to the government in 2008, okay?
Yeah.
So where are the prescriptions going to come from this time around?
Where is there left for it to come from?
So that's why, you know, you're probably starting to hear these kind of.
But yet, like I mentioned, you know, that was worse news than, well, for some of us at least, that was worse news than it even got some play yesterday. That story about the solar factory that went belly up in California with a bunch of federal loan guarantees.
Yeah, but there's also some corruption in the Obama administration tied up with that story too. I don't know if you you know, there's some background to that with a few.
Well, back scratching.
Bundlers, fundraisers for Obama that got some sweetheart deals and that shit collapsed. I mean, I don't really know how far it's going to go, but apparently.
Well, how long will it take Daryl Issa to get some subpoenas out on that?
Exactly. I'm telling you, that's a story to keep your eye out on. I was reading a little bit about it and I thought, that don't sound right. So, I don't know, but the financial thing is interesting. You know, if you pay attention to the little signals, like there's this intrabank, the loans that the banks do with each other, the overnight stuff.
Yeah.
All those signals are like they were before Lehman and worse. That's why people are freaking out. All the signals are worse now.
Yeah, same shit, different day. Is that?
Yeah, but it's worse because once again, remember, there is no provisions for bailout. I mean, the governments really can't do it, and China is looking like it might have a hard landing coming up too. Maybe not next year, but 2013, that shit is coming undone too. So yeah, no, it ain't. You know.
Well, when the economy over here goes south, the ability to prop that one up with relentless, ceaseless manufacturing growth has to be the last domino to fall, doesn't it?
Well, see, Europe is the sort of linchpin. You remember, it's, what is it, 560 million people. It's the largest economic bloc in the world. All the manufacturing from China back and forth is because of Europe. You see what I'm saying? The interconnectedness of it is stunning. So if Europe completely slows down, because it's already slowing down, like Germany grew 1.0%. I mean, you can't have it. You can't have Germany, which is in control of Europe, let's just say what it is,
yeah,
growing at 1%. That's a problem. And, you know, China slowing down at the same time. I don't know, Bob. You know,
every time we get into a discussion standard that's predicated upon unlimited growth or sustained growth at X percentage, there's just some part of me that says that, well, maybe it's because I spent so much time listening to people talking about sustainability in environmental terms. There, I'm using the word. 5%, 4%, 6%. You know, China's chugged along at, what, 9?
Well, no, but you
can't do that forever.
No, but you realize that whole, apparently, you know, we have been subpar growth since the mid-70s.
Yeah.
You know, in reality, if you look at it and all the macro info. So, you know, this is all just kind of coming home to roost. That's why this slowdown is just not some sort of secular type of business.
Well, does today's big announcement of the great big bank lawsuit, does that play into any of this? Is this trying to get in there before the crap can hit the fan? I mean, what?
I don't know because everything is so made up and magical. Because Bank of America, you see the state of that? That shit is scary because it really is falling apart. When Buffett bought into that, it wasn't so much, it was desperate. And they also, I told you, did I tell you they sold half of their stake in the Chinese concern? So
right.
Bank of America is in trouble. They keep losing. Their stock is going to be worth nothing soon. So where are they going to get the capital? Well, who's going to give them that?
Because we're all fresh out of bailout. I mean,
well, unless they do it secretly, because politically, ain't nobody going to be having the Bank of America getting bailed out again. See, this is also what the so-called leaders are facing now, a populace that is like, oh, hell, motherfucker, no, you ain't going to bail them out again. We also have that.
Yeah, and that's but that's also the same mindset behind we're also not going to have any real, because you know, if you take into account that the stimulus was half tax breaks on the in the first place, whatever, you know, no, we're never going to have any I don't even know what this speech he's going to give is, because there's no, how are you going to create jobs when you have already put the government's foot in a bucket and tied both hands behind your back? I mean, am I making any sense?
Oh, yeah, no, not
what's,
really
what's
that,
left
but,
to create with?
No, but when you have, you know, incentives for companies to ship jobs out, they still haven't rolled that back. The, you know, capital gains tax is still low, and they keep threatening to lower it. You know, there is.
Oh, yeah, what is it? Five of the Republican presidential candidates are now on board officially calling for not a rollback, but an outright end to the capital gains tax?
Yeah, and, you know, we know what was so sickening about that letter you were reading for the EPA. It's the whole meme that Obama has latched on of the environment being uncertain for business. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I can't even believe that he keeps embracing that. It's as bad as the...
Well, I mean, it's snake oil.
The government needs to tighten its belt, hell. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's some other creep today who said, we've got... Oh, I know. It was a member of Congress from New York. Her name is Irene... her name is Representative Nan Hayworth.
Oh, Nan! Yeah.
Yeah, in the wake of Irene beating the shit out of her district.
Nah, what's that bitch saying now?
Yeah, she says, here it is. Hayworth said she would only vote to replenish the federal disaster fund if new spending was offset by budget cuts. She said those cuts should come from non-defense discretionary spending. And here's that, this is that George H.W. Bush doesn't know what a barcode scanner moment is. Hayworth likened her position to a family skipping vacation if it was overwhelmed by bills. We have to control spending. There's no question about it.
Listen, the whole idea that you have a party that is suggesting anytime there's a disaster or some emergency that the help has to come at the expense of some offset, we are in some sort of Alice in Wonderland. And listen, you know I'm not a Christie fan. But hey, homeboy is starting to wake the fuck up.
You know, and he's almost big enough and mean enough to go and squash Eric Cantor like a damn bug.
Like, come on, let's go. You know what I mean? And when he stood up for that judge he appointed, I said, "Oh, listen, I'm not a fan, but I will have to go along with that incident and the Cantor shit."
Oh
and
yeah,
Christie,
you know, yeah, I mean,
he was scared him fools.
Well, yeah, I get the idea that where the disaster relief stuff's concerned, he's about one piss off away from get the helicopter and the ball bats. We're going to Virginia.
Right. I mean, because, you know, Cantor is a disgusting human being, except in 2004, when his district needed it, all of a sudden there was no offset being talked about. I mean, these people are despicable. He's a horror show, that Cantor. God, he's awful.
And again, it's one of those places where you go back to, you know, who the hell kind of people lives in his district?
Well, there's some dumbass people because, I mean, he's just a horrible person. I don't even know what else to say about him. And that Nan. And stupid. What is he talking about?
Yeah, I mean, the idea that getting slammed by a hurricane is just like not being able to go on vacation?
No, but also, once again, the government being sort of constrained all of a sudden. It's like, since when? Isn't that what government is for? I mean, it's just absurd. They don't even know what government is for, these people who are in charge, and that's a real worry.
You know what? I was gonna mention this anyway. On Reverbo's recommendation a long time ago, I finally got around to reading a magnificent book called Altered Carbon by a guy named Richard K. Morgan. It's kind of a cyberpunk meets murder mystery noir kind of thing.
Mm.
And it's all dystopian 500 years in the future.
Yes.
But again, it's 500 years in the future because it makes it that much easier to read it and go, oh, no, that's really today, isn't it, Richard? Because it is. And, you know, you see these pictures of roads completely washed away in Vermont and New York,
yeah,
and places like that, and you think, so in Republican world, we're just going to put up a sign that says, road ends here, good luck.
Yeah, no, that's the mentality, and it's just stunning.
Because that's how you get to dystopian futures, Sandra.
Yeah, no, when there is no political will to rescue and repair and rebuild. Because it's stupid, because even in the face of disaster, there's a stimulus involved. They don't even want to embark on that type of stimulus. It's mind-boggling.
And I mean, do you remember those studies of urban blight from years past?
Yeah.
Where it was really weird because they got to where they could predict how quickly a neighborhood would devolve into chaos and dystopia based on the number of broken windows on any given street and how long the windows remained unrepaired.
Mm.
You know, it's like once you get past three broken windows, the whole thing, the property values collapse and everything just goes done. And you know, I was just in D.C. You can see that stuff there. You know, you can see the demarcation between upwardly mobile young white folks and folks who actually work to keep the city going.
Yeah,
I mean, it's plain as day.
Yeah, I was amazed when I was in D.C. because, of course, me, I'm going to go to where the folks are. And it was just crazy, the difference, I'm telling you.
Oh, no, yeah, I mean, I went up this one road. We were meeting at a church. It was called St. Stephen and the, it was an Episcopal affair, St. Stephen and the Incarnation, or what, I think that's what it was. And we wound up going through this one neighborhood, and I just saw this telling thing. One black dude standing with his hands on a wall, six rollers, six cruisers from the DCPD to take care of one dude. And you're going, because, and meanwhile, you know, up and down these streets, I've gotten to where I look for grocery stores and gas stations. Because there wasn't any. The only grocery store was an organic market. And I'm guessing there weren't many people living around there who could pay $16 a pound for grass-fed, free-range, organic Montana beef.
Oh, my God, or $2 for a piece. Yeah, I know.
Right, yeah.
Oh, no.
But you know what? Every three storefronts was a liquor store.
Yeah, no, D.C. is a trip.
But, I mean, that's not just D.C., Sandra. You know, that's inner anywhere.
Oh, I know, no, I know. I just was just thinking about it, though. But the sort of disparities are just absolutely stunning in D.C. And when you match that with the idea that people don't have no representation, you're like, what is this, plantation economy much?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's just really sort of... You know, the plantation economy model is alive and well in D.C. That's ridiculous.
And you know, down there in the federal area, it's all beautiful, soaring Roman Revival architecture.
Right.
And you start getting out, and the little things that have been turned into tony little condos and stuff. And the things that have been torn down for McMansion apartments, and then you get out there where the real people live. And again, no gas. You might have a gas station. You ain't got no grocery store. You got your five to one liquor stores to convenience stores. The occasional little bodega. And
then you had the specter of Michelle Rhee wrecking havoc. You know, she just destroyed the public school system while she was there. I mean. D.C. is just, you know, it's like an experimentation on all the folks there with their various schemes. Yeah, no, it's out. Yeah, I don't, yeah. I was kind of appalled.
And it's, you know, I remember being there with Guy James and him going, you know, Bob, there's parts of this city I just love. And then I start thinking about what goes on in the parts of the city that I love and I hate it.
No, I was sort of, like I said, I was just sort of shocked you know, we'd go to different parts, and it's just kind of like schizophrenia much. And I'm on the constant lookout for crabs, you know, back to Pentagon City. And then you go out to, it was pretty bizarre, my little trip to D.C., I have to say. But you go up there a lot, don't you?
Lately I have been. Looks like I'll be going back again. And, you know, this was really inspiring to get to see this tar sands action protest. I'm so glad I got to go, and so thankful to Cold River Mountain Watch for sending me.
Well, is the protest, is it a set protest? Is it over with this weekend?
I think it closes out this weekend.
Okay.
But every day for 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it's going to wind up being, every day they've been down there. The people who are going to be there that day, they rally, they empower themselves, they get in a circle, they talk about why they're there. They very peacefully walk over and sit their ass down, and then the cops come out. And it's a very, and you know what I mean when I say this, it is a very stylized thing, like opera, you know? And the cops come out, and they crime scene tape off an area, and they bring in the vehicles so nobody can get a good photograph. And you certainly can't go over and interview anybody. And there are elements of it that are truly disturbing. You know, this thing has generated $100,000 in fines paid to the United States Park Police.
Well, the thing is, though, hasn't it generated a lot of PR for the cause, though? I mean, isn't it?
Oh, heck yeah, absolutely.
I mean, even if he signs off of it, isn't it? It must have made more and more people aware, because the only reason why I know about the whole Alberta tar sand pit was from that sub media TV a year ago was covering that, and I was horrified by the photos of it. So, but a lot of people must be sort of getting. This must be real new to people.
And it's it is because we were there for Mountaintop Removal Day, and it was really important and it was really well received that, you know, oppressed people from Appalachia would come up to stand with oppressed people from Canada.
The Canadians have been they've been upset about this for a while.
Well, because you can look at a photograph, for instance. Jeff Biggers had a piece on Alternet and Huffington Post too, I think. A photograph of where they're doing tar sands extraction looks a hell of a lot like a mountaintop removal operation. It's just goddamn devastation as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, I know the picture. I was really quiet.
But I mean, it's people coming from. The one woman from Amherst, Massachusetts, 84 years old, the cancer victim from Minnesota, people from from Florida, people from West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee. People from all up and down where the pipeline's going to go, and from other from other parts as well. And hopefully there's momentum getting built, and I hope nobody gets discouraged by the fact that because I swear, Sandra, I'm not I'm not paranoid. There's no black helicopter outside my window or anything. But this announcement today was it was specifically designed to poke a finger in the eye of these people.
Yeah, no, it's really disturbing. I mean, is this true that still 500,000 people or so are still without electricity behind this hurricane?
That was the last I read. Yeah,
it was like Katrina in Vermont, right? What the hell? What's happening? How are these people getting any help? I just was wondering.
Well, you just sit and wait. And it's not like Florida where the smart people know how to deal with a hurricane. You know, leave. Vermont got Katrina.
This is sort of rivers that, it sounds really awful. I mean, I heard that bridges were washed away and communities are trapped. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
They have to use helicopters to drop food and stuff.
And, of course, that costs money.
Well, and they have to cut somewhere before they get it, right? I mean,
right.
It's just beyond absurd. Well, listen, I've gone on for way too much, and go Michael Vick.
Why not?
Anyway, listen, have a good weekend.
All right, take care, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
Yeah, anything to keep Vince Young out of the game, and I'm sure he feels like that too. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, what's up?
October 26th, 2010.
Yes.
That's when it became very, very real to me. That's the date my husband died from COPD.
I know.
And I used to watch him breathe. And his entire chest would suck in as he tried to suck in air. He didn't have an excess ounce of weight on him because he literally burned himself up trying, from the energy he had to use, just trying to suck in enough air to keep himself alive.
It's a brutal thing to behold. And for Barack Obama to say, you know what, if that happens for 10 or 15,000 more people a year, you know, that's okay. And I'm not trying to be an ass, Susan. You know me well enough to know that I'm not. But isn't that what this administration is saying?
Yeah.
It's been going on. It'll keep going on. You know, what's another few thousand people till 2013?
Yeah, and at the same time, a self-confessed war criminal is gleefully romping all over the airwaves, confessing and reconfessing to war crimes, and the Justice Department is doing what? Nothing.
No, they're raiding Gibson guitars. That's why I said this is just, you know, this is Ashcroft 2.0. This is Chong's bongs all over again.
Well, I got a word for dear old Barack Obama. It was used in the 60s. For people who would sell out, shall we say.
And it is?
Actually, it was a two-word term, and one of them was Tom.
Yeah.
Need I go further?
No, I think not. And I don't, but you know what? I'm not being cantankerous. Is that what it is?
I don't know whether it's due to an actual sellout or whether, like you said, he's totally spineless.
I mean, the possibility exists that he, and I don't know how to say it or re-say it or say it in a way that makes it more easily obtainable. It's entirely possible he's doing exactly what he wants.
Yeah. Now, I didn't hold Donald's death against Barack Obama because Donald was exposed to asbestos when he was a young man many, many years ago. So, you know, that's not something that, you know, Barack Obama had anything to do with. But these regulations, yeah, he does. And for that,
and isn't there a bit of hubris involved as well, Susan, to say that we can wait till when he says we can wait till 2013 to do it? Isn't that him signaling to the rest of us, "Oh, you're going to vote for me"?
No, I'm not.
I mean, it,
that simple. I'm not. I won't vote for a Republican, but I won't vote for him.
And I mean, I'm certain as sunrise, where I stand on the primary. I know I am, and I realize that is largely a symbolic act.
Yes.
But you know what? If enough people engaged in that symbolic act, he would get a message loud and clear.
Yes, that would be one way of waking them up. Because these people have got, I cannot, They had to have studied. Nobody is born that dumb.
But is it dumb, Susan? Or is it, I ask again,
they sat down and
willful.
Decided this is the way they wanted to be.
They want to be pro-business.
Yeah. Been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, and I don't want to do it again.
There you go.
Now, it's whether or not he wakes up depends on whether or not I actively work against him. But as it is now, I'm going to...
Well, but that's the thing. We've got time now, you know, little teeny tiny radio show. Yeah, sure. But ideas can spread.
Yeah.
Don't vote for him in the primary.
It doesn't hurt anything.
It doesn't hurt anything. And the numbers... and then we need some smart people out there looking at the number, at his primary numbers contested in 08 versus primary numbers in 12.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at the primary numbers in 12, look at the number of people who vote in the Democratic individual Democratic primaries versus the number of people who vote for him. An incumbent president should always be the lead vote getter on any primary ballot. If he is not, then he's got it's time for him to have a little come to Jesus moment. Make sense?
Oh yeah. I just, I really hope it will do some good. I'm willing to try it.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I come from a tradition where one of the big verses is, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." And that's what we've got to do. We have got to, you know, because there's a lot of people that knocked on doors for him. Now it's time to knock on his damn door and see if he'll do anything for us.
Well, I prefer the image from... a TV program called NCIS. Mark Harmon whapping some guy up back of the head to get his attention.
Well, yeah, there's the slap the mule kind of.
Yeah, get his attention first. The only question is, how big of a 2x4 do we want to use? There is Move On has just initiated a deal where you can start your own petition. I wonder if perhaps we shouldn't start a petition saying, hey, we're not going to be voting for Obama in the primary. We are going to vote in the primary. We're just going to leave the president's office blank.
Should be.
He needs to pay attention to that.
It's about all that's left, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, because I don't want to bum people out completely, if they go up to the main website at
headonradionetwork.com, yes.
Right. On the featured section, there is this thing labeled, "The Barbarians Are Coming." And if you click on it, it takes you to a YouTube video. I suggest you play it. It's a diggle.
Oh, good. Barbarians, does this have something to do with Marcus Bachman?
Oh, yeah. And a flash mob.
Lovely.
And it's a definite.
Oh, no. Oh, lost Susan. So go and click on "The Barbarians Are Coming" at headonradionetwork.com. You know, because we all need a laugh, and the weekend's coming. It's a long weekend. By the way, I will mention that I see no reason why I should not be on the air Monday night. It's not like we're, you know, going off to our second home in Sutro. And many thanks for contributions this evening. Robert, otherwise known as Phase 5. Just dropped a note. He said, "I paid the rent. I paid a pink slip for the car." That means in Australia that the car is okay for on-road use. "Paid the car registration, the road tax. I paid the third-party compulsory car insurance, hugely up this year. I paid off the Visa. And for some odd reason, I had some money left over. So let's get September off to a good start. Robert says, I slept under a leaky roof for 6 years once. It was a pain every time it rained, so maybe some of this could go there. Robert, some of that will go there. Maybe that's what I'll do this weekend. Get back up on the roof again. Thank you very much, Robert. Thank you also to, Bruce. Thank you to, Jay. Thank you to, Albert. Thank you very much for, getting September started. I'm sorry, I said Bruce, I meant Barry. Thank you, Barry. So, let's, in the time we have remaining to us, let's keep going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, happy Friday, Brother Bob.
Well, Brother Albert, I conjured you.
Yes, absolutely. Just like I wanted to talk to you today about what I had last night. But first, there's got to be a warning because there's going to be some adult language because I'm sick of it. I've had it. And so listener discretion.
Yeah, little Timmy, little Cindy, out of the room.
I'm trying to be nice, but I'm so sick of this shit. And I know how people are upset about the whole, the smog and regulations and that shit. It just spins my ass as well. But when he capitulated to putting off the job speech, my rectum imploded. I could barely breathe. So that last night, I went and I had a nice dream. Now maybe you remember, but I don't know about you. Well, maybe you do. You remember when I used to tell you how I used to dream about George Bush and I'd be chasing him? And
yeah.
That's when it all started really, I know this is a little crazy, but that's when it really started to fall apart for him. It really did. That's when the wheels started to really come off. It was when I started chasing. So last night I had a dream. And I brought my family to Barack Obama's family. He lived in this fucked up house. I mean, I'm telling you, he had a crazy shrine in it and a this and a that. And the floor was all messed up where the two girls, we introduced his girls to my girls and so on and so forth. And he looked at me. And it was funny. Michelle didn't even understand why she was there. I have very strange dreams. They're very lucid. And she was like, why am I here? What are we doing? We're going to eat? And Barack, who just had to come in from getting yelled at from his across the street wheelchair stuck with an oxygen mask old white woman, and she was yelling at him about trimming his hedges or something. He comes in and we sit at his desk and he's like, what do you want from me? And I say, I want you to tell the Republicans fuck you instead of telling us the same. That's what I want. That's what we want to hear. Isn't that what we want to hear, everyone? I mean, am I lost on this?
No. I think you're right there. We're tired of being told that, and we'd like to see somebody else get told that for a change, yes.
Sit down and shut up and listen. That's what we want. Now, I'm going to continue. I'm not going to stop. Whatever the hell it does probably as much as voting does, so whatever. But, come on. What do you mean jobs? What job? You know what job we need. You're going to sit here and pull tar sands and open up the fucking the smokestacks and whatever else, to deregulate more of them vampire cannibals on Wall Street. And you're going to sit there and then you're not going to talk about solar panels? What? Don't tell me. And that's the other thing. You're talking David, da-da-da-da. You talk about cost. I hate that shit. I can't stand, just like you guys are saying, I can't, what fucking cost when the whole planet is a crater? When it's just a smoldering husk of a desert? What cost? What the hell does cost mean? I don't understand that.
See, I remember when John Fox very trenchantly observed, no planet, no economy.
Huh. Who are these people talking about? I had to teach my kids. I say, you say all these sayings to your kids, and you think that they catch it, you just do, because you say it, It's like, so I was talking about cutting the nose off to spite the face. I can't think of another analogy that's better than that in terms of what we're doing with our economy. We're cutting our nose off. Actually, we're cutting our face off. We're cutting our goddamn head off. We're cutting the rest of our body at the ankles off to spite the whole thing. What the hell is this? It's so stupid. It's so outrageous. I mean,
we're cutting our nose off to spite our lungs. How's that?
I'm still going to vote for this son of a tired of his ass, but I'm still going to vote for him because I couldn't even imagine Rick Perry. We'd have to, you need a beeper, Bob. It'd be beep, 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 beep. It'd be like watching Clark Ramsey over there on American television. It would just be a one long, big, continuous beep and a beep and a beep. And can you imagine? We can't survive that. There's no way. Now, I don't know. Maybe, you know, I remember I said a while ago, maybe Bush should have had a third term.
To finish the job?
He should have had a third term. Right? We said that way back when he was still, you know, halfway through his second term. He should have had a third term. We should have let him. Because he needs it. And Dick Cheney running around. You know, the undead, don't talk shit to me, undead. He's an undead.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yes, he is. He is.
Zombie. I don't want to hear it. Shut up. I'm going to get the garlic and the goddamn sun. I mean, I don't understand why isn't he in prison? Why is he sitting there laughing now?
Well, because we have to look forward and not back.
No. Barack better pull a 280, because I don't know what in the hell is going on in this planet, because does he know what's going on in this planet? Because I think we're on top of it. I don't know about you. I think we've pretty much...
No, I feel like we've got a pretty good generalized understanding, Albert.
Yeah, I think we've got a good grip on this whole deal, and they're not addressing. They're doing the other thing.
And I mean, okay, can I have a moment to kind of go off the rails for a second?
Bob, you know, please do.
You act and you speak from that place, Albert, that is intensely concerned and lovingly worried about a pair of precious little girls that are the only connection, if I understand your theology right, you will ever have with immortality. And that's where I come from, too. I'm one step further into the game because there's grandchildren involved now. And I'm not competing.
I can't catch up.
But you'll get there someday. Trust me.
I'll get there. I don't worry. I'm a turtle.
But the point is, believe me, this rabbit didn't mean to get there that fast. The point is that, you know, when you've got those little people, unless you are possessed of some thing inside you that says, well, it's going to be like that for them, but for mine it's going to be okay.
Mm.
You know, mm-mm. Sasha and Malia are beautiful, adorable, intelligent, precious. And they got to live on the planet with your daughters and my granddaughters and my daughters and son. Now, they may never meet each other, but they still have to share the planet with them.
Mm-hmm. They breathe the same air and drink the same water.
And, you know, it's D.C., and there's coal-fired power plants around there. And that's the, you know, what he's screwing with in the name of jobs is his daughter's own ability to go on being air breathers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stuck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm licked. Because I don't know, you know, how does that information go in one ear and get lost? Or go in both ears and just hit a wall. You know, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, girls. If I was Michelle, and I should probably leave this up to one of the beautiful women who call this program. If I was Michelle, Albert,
mm-hmm.
Door to the bedroom in the residence would be locked.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be, you sleep on the couch. Mm-mm-mm. You don't like our girls breathing clean air. Well, you just get on out there and you breathe, you know, you breathe some of that crap, and we'll talk about it in the morning if I feel like talking to you in the morning. Because Jesus Christ, they're parents. And they're not going to get to live in the Logan's Run Dome. And it wasn't that fun a place anyway. I'm sorry, brother.
No. I don't know. It's not anything that he's a parent. We voted him in. We voted him in. We did. And I know he's done some things that, you know, background structural shit that really isn't glamorous. But things that sort of needed to be done, you know. You can't say he hasn't done anything. You just have to look at his record and say, wow, he's done a whole bunch of things. But now he's doing these big things, the glistening and sparkly things, and it's like, what? What? Who the fuck are you? What is this? Where did this come from? When did we tell you that this is what we wanted? That we didn't. We want solar panels. We want windmills. We want this. This is what, not even what we fucking want. It doesn't mean anything to want it. This is what we need. We don't want
We require it.
We require it. Because we live in a society that requires electricity. Now, we have all this great news of solar becoming on par for cost to, that petroleum does, you know, when oil, you know, and that's with the subsidies of oil. Wait. So solar's that cheap now, and we do need this, and we do need these jobs. And I know that the pieces are all there, Bob. It's one plus one plus one plus one. You know, we don't have to get ridiculous in terms of science. And then, you know, and I remember I told you a long time ago that they weren't going to find any Higgs boson. And you know what the LHC came out and said? We're not finding it. There's no more supersymmetry. No, it's not happening. They're going to have to go all the way back, and they're going to have to relook at all that stuff. And that's good. That's a beautiful thing about science, is science will go, whoa, finally, we're going to have to really turn around the other way. Politics is...
And who's going to... And, you know, just to extend that inquiry, Albert, who's going to fund that science?
Well, that's... There we go in the cost again.
No, I mean, I'm not trying to be an asshole about this, but you know what? ExxonMobil is not going to fund that rethinking of everything we think we know.
True, because then we'll realize, though, we can tap into the magnetic field. And but, you know, there's all that jazz. But, I mean, I don't understand who he thinks he's representing. I know he's a president of all Americans, and it's a beautiful thing to be president of all Americans. So lead by example. Stop bending over and coddling these people. What are you doing? Why are you behaving this way?
That's and again, it goes back to what Sandra's saying about this is a winnable argument. You show up in front of the American people and say, everybody, you may have forgotten, but this is my daughter Sasha. This is my daughter Malia. And you've got kids and grandkids, and some of you have great-grandkids just like them. You know what? I want them to be able to breathe. How do you lose that argument?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you're talking to somebody who, you know, I sledgehammer people that try to argue against that for a living. So, I mean, you can't. There's no way you can lose it because it's black and white. It's right there. Maybe they need to be waterboarded. I don't know. You know, waterboarded with some coal sludge water. Can you breathe this? Because that's what they're going to turn the friggin' air into.
Yeah.
Just an oily film of particulates and goddamn carcinogens. And it's like, you know, we're in the food, you know, you sit there, you talk about, we got processed food up the yin-yang, and we all know it's not good for us. You know, when the tortillas have 35 ingredients in it, and the peanut butter's got 45 ingredients in it, it's not peanut butter, and it's not tortillas, and it's probably not really good for you to eat. And this is, you know, why, you know, we got the diseases and the this and that and that. Why are you making such a simple thing that when you do it simply and you do it with care, it's the best thing that you could ever put in your mouth? When you do something right, it's delicious. You don't have to make it complex. Pizza crust is flour, yeast, salt, and olive oil. That's it. That's it. That's all you need.
Yeah, those tortillas, masa flour, and water.
Water. Hey, you don't need 100,000 things in it. You don't need to sit here and make these things. This is not, I don't
need any maltodextrin 35.
No, why is there red coloring in my tortilla? What the hell is that?
Well, because actual red corn is a little bit more expensive than red coloring, Albert, but...
I mean, we better get our asses and heads wired together because, You know, I mean, you know, they sit there and they talk this and that and this. We're only a couple of disasters away from complete collapse.
Right, that now, dystopia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and who's gonna be calling the shots when that happens? You know, it's like I love when people talk. Oh, he believes in the Constitution. You know, I had this discussion. Belief in the Constitution. The Constitution is just a framework, isn't it? There's not really a lot of ideas there. That's not no grand statement of belief. That's the Declaration. And see, people always mouse it up and coddle it up. You know, the Declaration, and I've been, you know, from the very beginning, that was always my favorite. I've always had a little soft spot in my heart for that because that's the one with the ideas. That's the philosophy of this country. That's the government's goddamn job, according to the Founding Fathers, is to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So that's their job, to protect life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Right, and by the time you get to the Constitution, in fact, I was having this conversation with my buddy Bo Webb the other day, once you understand that the difference between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution lies in the fact that in the period between the Declaration of Independence, the Revolution, the Articles of Confederation, and the framing of the Constitution, and I would never have known this without Dr. Bill and the Prism series, once you realize that the reason for the Constitution is because democracy was breaking out all over, and that we were just having a little too much of it, and we went from life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the Declaration of Independence to life of the rich people, liberty of the rich people, and pursuit of happiness for rich people. That's basically what's embodied in the Constitution. And I refuse to get all squishy about it. I mean, I live in this realistic world where elements behave according to their natures, and so do governments. And what you had was the money getting nervous. And thus you get the Constitution. And that's why people like Jefferson were saying, wait a minute, shouldn't we just go ahead and amend it right now and put in a little something about government not trampling on people's rights? Because that's all the Constitution was about. And you can read all the Federalist Papers. Federalist 10, where Madison punts and says, we're going to have political parties, screw it. And offers this pathetic justification for it. But, you know, it's article, you know, it sets up an executive, a legislative, and a judiciary, and does it in such a way as to make sure none of those entities can upset the financial and economic apple cart of the well-to-do.
And it's all just a ride.
Yeah, by the way, Jeanette is really, really down with your idea of waterboarding these bastards with tar sand sludge.
I hate to sound like, some sort of left-wing tyrant or something, but my God, what is it going to take? I'm trying to talk reason to them. I'm trying. What do you want? All right, then here, breathe it. What do you want? You're making us do it. You're going to destroy everything. Tar sands is not petroleum, you fucking idiots. It is not. Oh, all right, fine. Look what you had to do to get it. It's not like when you...
Albert, it's the same... It's roughly the same dodge as liquid coal fuel.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, where you've... Let's go ahead and get alimentary, if we will.
Mm-hmm.
It's roughly the same process as what is required to create high fructose corn syrup. If you start with something that isn't even remotely what it is that you hope to get out of the end process, and you have to expend massive amounts of energy and time and resources to get it from point A to point C, and the only thing that you get as an end result is profit, and it because, I mean, God dog it. You know, I would be open to the argument, Albert. I would be open to the argument if somebody could say, okay, I guarantee you the price of a gallon of gasoline will drop by $1.50 if we just have this tar sands pipeline. I am not an unreasonable man. But they can't make that promise. They can't even make that allegation. They can't allege that the price of a gallon of gasoline will drop by a nickel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all they can guarantee is that they are going to make massive corporate profits out of this, and that a handful of people will have, and I do mean a handful of people, will have a job building this godforsaken pipeline, and then the company will look at them and go, we'll see you.
Yeah. This is the Koch brothers pipeline.
Oh, yeah. They're going to get stupid richer out of it. Yes.
Yeah,
and
now,
and in light of the fact that they own Georgia Pacific, you know, if there's a big spill between those 20 miles distant valves, I guess we'll use some Bounty goddamn paper towels to soak it all up with. And everybody wins, and everybody makes a profit, and everybody has a share.
Oh, filth. I mean, I don't know. I didn't know it was this complicated in terms of, I mean.
It's only complicated if you make it that way, Albert.
Well, they're making it complicated. They're the ones that are sitting there saying, you know, like, for example, let's say we did have solar panels everywhere. What would we do for fuel? You know, if we had solar panels everywhere, we'd probably wind up having an excess of electricity during the day. You know, we want that. We want that surplus. Maybe we can turn those electrons into splitting some oxygen from, or as oxygen and hydrogen from water, and we can, you know, start, you know, because you can run an internal combustion engine on hydrogen. You know, you need to change some gaskets or whatever, but you can do it. That way we wouldn't have to scrap our entire vehicles, our 300, or probably, well, the country's got 300 million people, there's probably 700 million vehicles. You know, we wouldn't have to scrap all of them worldwide. We could still run on hydrogen, then you wouldn't need an oil change anymore because there's no carbon to make it dirty, and, you know, and, it would run nice, and we could do these things. I want to see some vision. You know, that was the one thing, that's the one thing separating you, and I, of course, wins of Carter, and I mean, God damn it, you know I want to see Carter have a second term, because we probably wouldn't be having this discussion right now if Carter made us disappointed too, and this is the same thing with Obama. That's why he needs a second term.
I know.
If that son of a bitch George Bush gets a second term, Barack Obama gets a second term. He may not be doing everything to make us happy, but he's not doing George Bush. He's no Rick Perry or Michelle Bachmann or Ron Paul or any of these other freaks.
That's why I'm saying I'm laying out of the primary.
He pisses us off because he ain't doing the shit that we know that he needs to get done, but he's not one of them. Well, maybe he is. I don't know. I can't say. I'm going to get him. I'm going to keep haunting his ass, though.
Well, you know, all of this is relatively easy. Again, after he gets done introducing Sasha and Malia. He can run them off the stage, and he can turn sideways to the camera, Albert, and he can pull his ear back and say, I want you to see something here. And he can turn the other way and pull the other ear forward. And go, see, I don't have any gills. You got any gills out there? All the humans developing gills in the room. Raise your hand. Oh, okay, then we're all going to need to breathe air for a while longer. I know. Got to get out of here, Albert.
Yes, sir, Brother Bob. All right, you have a great weekend.
You have a wonderful weekend, too. I'll be here Monday.
All right, brother.
All right, see ya. Where does the time go? Sorry for the other blinking lights. The tune in on Monday, and hopefully you will be right there in the thick of things. Thanks, everybody. This is my first day back after 3 days away in D.C., and you have made it a wonderful one despite the frustration. Anybody who begins to sprout gills, send me an email and a photo, okay? Because we can send those to the White House. Hey, look, tell Cass Sunstein it's okay. We're growing gills! Right? Thank you to all of you who have kindly contributed, donated, and given to keep all of this going. We took care of September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd tonight. So that means we will get after it on Monday, and we'll actually be on track. Thank you. And we've got other stuff to go into on Monday as well. A follow-up to the child who was spanked to death. You're not gonna like this. But we have to go there just the same. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Sparky and Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Texas Betsy, our blogger. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. Thanks to my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee. Thank you to John Fox, who makes so much of what happens here happens. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Coming up on 10 years that Ben has been keeping liberal talk alive on the Internet, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org contained therein. Learn about the Coal River Wind Project. And by the way, there's a button there that says join. Join Coal River Mountain Watch and be a part of the solution and the future. Rick Smith is next. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and we begin what will be a both truncated and foreshortened week of broadcasting. By that, I mean, I ain't going to be here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, okay? Sorry about that, but this seems like a worthy undertaking. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week, I will be in either en route to, en route from, or in Washington, D.C. It's another one of those whirlwind sort of things. But you know what? Sometimes voices come from whirlwinds, depending on whose holy book you're reading. And they can be rather important when they do. Not that I think that... No, you know what I mean. Now, tomorrow, a number of us are going up from here in almost level West Virginia. And we're going to go to Washington, D.C., and we are going to link up with our comrades who are struggling, our colleagues... For those who are off-put by the word comrades, I mean, I'm not going to say tovarich or anything, but, well, some people just get a little, funny about comrade. No, we're going to link up with our colleagues, people who are being tormented by the extraction of the tar sands, who will be tormented by the building of the pipeline that runs from somewhere up in Alberta, Canada, all the way down to, Jeebus, Houston, Texas? Yeah. And which company planning to build said pipeline has already had a host of problems and spills. They've done scientific engineering estimates, and they say, well, you know, we're not going to spill a lot of oil, just some every once in a while. Now and then. Sort of. Kind of. Yeah. So... It is no. This concept is something that we have sort of been in the process of developing for a long time here, and that is the notion, and it happened organically. A number of years ago, coal companies said, "Listen, if you'll shut up about this mine, then we won't do that one." And you know what? I don't think anybody was fooled. But others might have been tempted by that. You know, they're going to leave this alone if they can just destroy that. But it was realized right then that, such separate pieces are indeed the worst kinds of deals with the devil. That, in fact, if we don't want to be blown up, we have no right to suggest that others be blown up in our stead. It reminds me of how conscription was handled in the North during the war, wherein if one was conscripted into the Union Army, one could pay someone else to go in one's place if one was wealthy enough, and thereby avoid service and avoid the hardship, the misery, the heartache, and yes, death that attended it all. Kind of like that. And so the process, as I said, was very organic as we realized that what's not okay to do to us is not okay to do to someone else. And now the folks in the struggle to end mountaintop removal have really gelled this concept and realized that it's not something that is merely local or regional or even national, that it is global. And so we say, what's not all right to do to us in the form of mountaintop removal is not okay to do to Canadians, is not okay to do to the native peoples through whose lands these pipelines will pass, is not okay to do to the people of Houston, Texas, where this damned thing, or any of the other states through which this damned thing will pass. And it's not okay to do to the rest of the citizens of the planet who will pay with their health, their well-being, and indeed their very lives for the foolhardy, hateful notion of a little more oil company profit. So that's the purpose. That's the reason for going up there. Folks will be getting arrested on Wednesday. And I hope to be documenting some of that. I will certainly tell you about it upon my return. If we get back on Thursday early enough, I will tell you about it on Thursday evening show. But if we do not, then I will certainly tell you on the front porch on Friday. Okay? I hope that works out. This feels really, this really does feel like an important moment. For making a very, very critical connection. Coal is the single filthiest hydrocarbon fossil fuel available for use on the planet. Oil is next. And among so-called oils, the tar sands are just about the nastiest of the nasty. This goo won't even float without being heated. It won't move. It has the viscosity of molasses in January. No, really. They got to cook it some to get it to move in the pipeline. By the way, the emergency shutoff valves for that pipeline are something on the order of 20 miles apart. What could possibly go wrong with 20-mile gaps in being... Well, come on. So you see the urgency. So we're going to be up there, a number of us. Bo Webb, Mickey McCoy, and I are traveling together tomorrow. And I look forward to getting there and talking to so many people of goodwill who understand the urgency with which this is being met. And I reiterate, I approach it from a standpoint of human rights. For it is my position that human beings have a right not to be tormented in the name of some godforsaken shareholder's profit, or even more godforsaken CEO's $15,000 gold-plated shower curtain, or whatever obscenity seems to grabs their fancy at any given moment. You get my point. And there is indeed a real sense of urgency attending all of this. You know that the State Department has said, pipeline? Great. Sounds wonderful. Canadians want it. Why shouldn't we? And it is awaiting President Obama's signature. Just to, you know, pass holy writ on it, and away they'll go, and because it's going to mean some jobs. Jobs. That's J-A-W-B-Z-Z-Z, jobs. Because that is the measure of all things in America now. Jobs! Don't matter what kind of jobs. You know, over there we got some jobs, poison fetuses. And over here, we got us some jobs in the hydrocarbon energy industry is going to poison us some nine-year-old little girls so their insides won't work right and their babies will come out looking like they shot out a small-bore cannon when they get around to having cheerings. But these jobs, we got to have them. You know, I have yet to hear of any birth defects attending proximity to windmills. I haven't yet heard a single story of a cancer-causing solar panel or someone having to have an organ removed because they got too close to a geothermal installation. But all some hydrocarbon thug, some hydrocarbon fossil fool has to do is say, you know what, we're going to go and mess around in some poison in Canada, and we're going to poison all kinds of people in Canada, and we just want to have the opportunity in the name of, well, we're going to create some jobs, jobs, poisoning people, got jobs, you hear me, jobs is what I'm talking about, jobs. We're going to poison some people, you know, passing through the Lakota lands, we're going to poison some people, maybe, who knows, down Missouri way, we're going to poison some people in Arkansas, oh, we might have to poison some people in Iowa way. But they're jobs. And all the little politicians.
Said, what was that? Did you say something about jobs? Oh, goodness me, jobs.
Never stopping to wonder why there aren't any good jobs, any clean jobs, any green jobs. And in fact, there are people who would tell you that there aren't any green jobs. There's a classic example of that. I was reading over at Ken Ward's Coal Tattoo the other day. Found it quite fascinating. Lo and behold, that's exactly what was argued recently. It's rather astonishing, really. Ken Ward noting in his blog, that it has been asserted that the green jobs movement and sector is somehow it's just failing. That it's not what it's supposed to be. Only it turns out it's exactly not what was being said. In particular, what Ken Ward notes at Coal Tattoo is that I got to get through this it's a New York Times story. And the claim made is number of green jobs fails to live up to promises. And it cites a Brookings Institution report that said clean technology jobs accounted for just 2% of employment nationwide and only slightly more, 2.2% in Silicon Valley. Okay. Well, enter a guy named Joseph Rahm. Joseph Rahm is cited by Ken Ward. And he says, talk about a bait and switch. The New York Times cites the Brookings Institution study, but then pulls out one tiny piece of it to make the exact opposite argument of the study. Brookings actually found that nationwide from 2003 to 2010, the clean economy grew by 8.3%, almost double what the overall economy grew during those years. Mark Murrow is a senior fellow at the Brookings Metropolitan Program, co-author of the report. He says the pace of growth really is torrid in that sector. This confirms the intuition that these exciting industries really are growing as fast as we think they are. And he said, we all wonder sometimes whether it's worth giving, pay attention here. Because this has to do not with whether or not there's a growing green economy, but whether or not the for-profit media will report it accurately. You'll see what I mean. He says, we all wonder sometimes whether it is worth giving extended interviews to reporters, knowing that they may just pick out one or two words or phrases that match their desired narrative. Fortunately, most get it right. But right now, with Obama down in the polls, overall job creation slow, and the fossil fuel-funded disinformers pushing lies about clean energy, many in the media want to tell yet another story of how Obama failed. He goes on to say this, the narrative in the New York Times story is just false. Clean energy jobs have soared in recent years, for no small part to Obama's stimulus bill, as well as the business community's understanding of the threat posed by climate change, something the article is silent on. The promise of millions of clean energy jobs was always based on the passage of policies that the GOP have so far successfully torpedoed. Yes, Obama deserves some blame for the failure of those policies, but I've always said that it is under 10% of the blame. Some 60% belongs to the right wing and its disinformers, with another 30% to the media itself themselves for failing to tell the story. It is the realities of global warming and peak oil that ensure the world will generate millions of clean energy jobs in the coming decade, and for more than and far more than that in the ensuing decades. When we get truly serious, this remains the story of the decade and the century. And thus the question, why can't Appalachia have some of that? The obvious answer, we're not supposed to. We are the little fiefdom of the coal industry, and if we don't like it, we can screw it. Or actually get screwed. So, all of that, but mostly the human rights aspect, is part and parcel of why I'm heading out tomorrow. And I hope you will be patient and join me for conversation either Thursday or Friday. Friday for certain. Thursday's kind of maybe-ish. Like I said, it just depends. You know, it's tough to get out of a 300-mile car drive and just run in and jump behind the microphone. It's just bleh, it's difficult. Ron is feeling froggy this evening. He says, but Bob, you forgot about the death of migratory birds and bats at the blades of the wind turbines. You're just too cruel to forget about our feathered and furred friends. Bat ceviche is what I call it. Now, you think I've forgotten, don't you? but I haven't. It's the beginning of the week, you know. Which means it's Monday. Which means that we've had an entire weekend, and I hope yours was lovely. Mine was. Up east, not so much. Hurricane Irene was very, very real. Although, I guess Barack Obama is already being blamed by the right wing for not for having overreacted to a hurricane. For the wing nuts. And I know they're not listening or anything, but I'm just asking. Maybe you could pass the question along. Somebody could give me an answer. There's a word for people who under-prepare for a hurricane. Do the little wing nuts know what that word is? Just say, dead. Dead. The word for people who under-prepare for hurricanes is dead. You know what? You should always over-prepare for a hurricane. Because over-preparing for a hurricane means that you've got a better chance of being, oh, I don't know, feeling chagrined or whatever at the after the hurricane is gone rather than feeling dead. Which is a state, really, of not feeling at all when you get right down to it. But for my part, and I don't want to sound like an ass or anything, because it comes all too natural to me, frankly. But Saturday, Ferg and I stood out in the yard, and we watched this band of clouds that I swear was no more than 500 feet above the mountaintops. Just absolutely cooking. In the wrong direction. And we stood there and we stared at it and we cogitated on it a minute. And then, you know, I wasn't saying anything. I was going to let it come to him. He said, finally he looked at me and said, Dad, is that the hurricane? I said, those are the outer bands of the hurricane, son. Because every now and then, you know, for a little while, the wind would come from the north and then the wind would come from the northwest and it would come from the south and the southeast. And it was the outer bands of the thing swirling past us. And so Ferg had this little meteorological epiphany. And so did I. Just sitting there on the picnic table, and because it would be sunny, then just gray as doom, and then sunny some more. Not so much as a drop of rain, and I didn't have to chase a single shingle. Ooh, I got past that one without stumbling. Single shingle. Don't take me for granted. Things like that, you know, you can hurt yourself trying to say things like single shingle on the fly. Which also sounds like a punk band, or maybe, I don't know, maybe a band made up of lawyers, single shingle. But, no, absolutely quiet here. Yeah, Ferg, what do you need, buddy?
I'm getting the guitar because I'm going to noodle on the song Amy.
Noodling, are we?
Well, knowing the song.
Well, as long as you're not boondoggling.
There's a difference. There is a difference.
And when you use the pick, what are you going to do with the pick?
Put it back.
Put the pick back. That's right. We're going to put the pick back.
I won't drop it in your guitar again. I swear.
Okay, thank you.
Love you, Dad. Love you, listeners.
Yeah, he's gotten to that point where he wants to, yeah, hugs and kisses. Jeez. Teenagers. They need to, well, no, they're not going to come out with a drug for that. But, well, anyway. So I hope everybody had as few harrowing moments as did we here. But I think it's likely that many of you didn't, up east. Jesus, it looked ugly in Vermont. But no, I do know what day it is. It's Monday. It's Moran Monday. Oh, wait. Yeah, Ferg did like the tune. Ron sent a tune along for Ferg to check out. Ron says, how about this? and lo, he stood in the midst of the wind and calmed them. I think that's what the wingnuts wanted, but according to them, he's not the Messiah. I wish these dolts would make up their minds. No, that's the thing. They didn't. If he'd done that, he would have been a false prophet. And probably a Muslim, Kenyan, anti-colonialist false prophet. You got to understand how this whole thing just shakes out. I wonder if Pat Robertson was waiting for the Washington Monument to go over. But you know, right? You know about Michelle Bachmann. This just not at all well strapped down woman, crazy lunatic. Yeah, they can't resist it. They're so deep into their religious sickness. They just can't help it. She was talking in Florida, Michelle Bachmann was. It's more in Monday. I'm not going to play the music because there's too much crazy as it is. No. And it's too late to head to the hills. We are up to our armpits in Morans. This is still, however, the program that helps you tell the Morans. You just can't tell them much. And making sure that this program continues to get out is still dirt cheap. Less than 5 cents per hour of programming once you sort it all out. We are closing on the end of the month of August. And we are within striking distance of actually making our monthly goal. It's taken a lot of help. And your challenges have been a big part of it. We still need $20 more, I believe, to meet John's snail mail challenge. Correct me if I'm wrong. But $20 more, and that'll mean instead of a $100 contribution, that'll make a $200 contribution by John's snail mail challenge. The snail mail address is at headonradionetwork.com. You can find it under the Contribute tab. I'll repeat it now. It's 1038, it's the horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in boy, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801, 25801. But what would it take? It would take 30 people. 30 people tonight at $10 apiece, and we can be done with the month of... We will actually have reached our goal, which will be huge, considering how tough June and July were for obvious reasons. So if you would consider that as we round out the month of August, I won't be here to do the end of August tomorrow night, so we'll just do it tonight, okay? But no, it was in Florida... It was in Florida that Michelle Bachmann, this loopy, crazy, evil woman, offered her analysis of why hurricanes happen. And I'm still not okay with it. And yeah, we've talked a good bit about fundamentalist religion the last two or three episodes of the program. And I don't mean to, I don't set out for it to be that way, but it's kind of hard to avoid when it's up in your face because these religion industry fundamentalists, these evil dominionists, these people who spank their children to death because God wants them to, they won't leave us normal people alone. They insist on their right to be in our faces. Because otherwise they're getting persecuted if we ask them to just sit down and shut the hell up for a little bit. Or to do it in their own churches and leave the rest of us out of it. No, Michelle Bachmann was in Sarasota, Florida. When she said the following, as reported by the St. Petersburg Times.
I don't know how much God has to do to get the attention of the politicians. We've had an earthquake. We've had a hurricane. He said, are you going to start listening to me here? Listen to the American people, because the American people are roaring right now. They know government is on a morbid obesity diet, and we've got to rein in the spending.
I couldn't have written something that hateful if I had set out to try to write something in the voice of Michelle Bachmann. This poisonous, toxic, dirt, ignorant woman. How many people are dead from Irene? 21? Was that the number? More? Less? Does it matter? Except to say that people are dead from Irene? And they're dead so her brutal, vicious, arbitrary, and capricious, hate-filled, juvenile delinquent in the sky could send a message to some politicians to tell them to quit wasting money on things like Social Security and Medicare. Do you see how the twisted, sick, anti-reasoning of the right wing works? Well, it's not God's fault. If those liberal politicians would have just cut off Granny's Social Security and Medicare, God wouldn't have had to have killed Granny with a hurricane. Mysterious are his ways. Praise be to Almighty God, worlds without end. Amen and amen. You think I'm making that up? I have a clip here from Michelle Bachmann at something called Spirit Midwest Christian Music Festival. And I'm not exactly sure when it took place. Isaac sent this to me. And I tweeted it, and there's been some discussion on the Twitter about what exactly Michelle Bachmann is saying. But on first listen, on second listen, and third through fifth listen, it sounds an awful lot. Well, you'll hear it. You tell me what she's saying. It has been said to me that she's not saying what I thought she was saying. But even if she's not saying what it sounds like she's saying, and I know we're getting lost in that, even if she's saying what other people are saying she's saying, why is she saying it? The hell does it mean? Is it speaking in tongues, word salad babble? And if that's the case, where's the person with the gift of translation? Well, enough setup. Let's just hear the crazy.
No! Thank you, Jason. Who likes wet people?
Now, this YouTube video comes from a YouTuber by the name of On Knees for Jesus 3. And this YouTube provides a convenient bit of, it puts the words up there for what you just heard.
Oh, thank you, Jason. Who likes white people?
Yeah, sounds like who likes white people to me, too. But even Michelle Bachmann wouldn't say something that loony, would she? Who likes white people? Hey! Huh? Huh? Because, you know, she said crap that crazy before. But no, the debate seems to be that she was saying who likes wet people. Because I guess she was in Waterloo, Iowa, or somewhere that it was raining. You can see a big blue tarp in the foreground of the video. Although this being a radio show, you'll just have to take my word for that unless you're running off to see the thing now, in which case I've lost you. I hope that's not the case. Who likes white people? Who likes wet people? Well, okay. Either one's pretty weird. You know, I like wet people, especially people who are wet just because they've just been baptized in the name of Christ Jesus. No, I wish there was that much of a tie together. Me, I'm camped out and waiting for, like I said, the day she campaigns in Ottumwa, Iowa, and says, and I would be remiss if I didn't note today that we're here in Ottumwa, Iowa, the home of that famous Korean War hero, Walter Radar O'Reilly. Let's hear it for Radar. I'm sorry, Ottumwa, Iowa is stuck in my brain because how many times did that character mention that he was from Ottumwa, Iowa on MASH? And yes, I'm that old. But no, this is her talking to her kind of people, whether they be white or wet white. And she speaks that sort of contorted dog whistle language. You'll hear it. You'll understand. For you have been given the gift of translation.
About the creator of the universe, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, isn't that even a little bit of a theological stretch? Because, well, I mean, you've got to, don't you have to go through all that Trinity mathematics to get to creator of the universe, Jesus Christ? Because wasn't that his dad that did that? You know, the one that raped the teenager? Right, you know the rest of the theology. Creator of the universe, Jesus Christ. Okay, keep going, Michelle.
I was born here in Iowa. I was born in Waterloo and Cedar Falls, and we were...
Now, wait. You can have one or the other, but not both, Michelle. You were not born in Waterloo and Cedar Rapids. I mean, that's a kind of sort of theological math that goes past mangers, isn't it? It was so popular when I was born in Waterloo, they moved over and did it again, just crammed me right back up there, and then, yeah, I was born in Cedar Rapids, too. And that's not fooling around with the audio. She says that kind of stuff. Like I said, it's just babblicious word salad.
Here in Iowa. I was born in Waterloo and Cedar Falls, and we were at church.
Oh, Cedar Falls, and we were at church. It's a hell of a memory she's got to know that she was born at church. And let's not judge.
I was born here in Iowa. I was born in Waterloo and Cedar Falls, and we were a church-going family in Waterloo and Cedar Falls.
So I guess that's four times on Sundays. Waterloo and Cedar Falls, you get up, you go to Sunday school, and how does that work? Or maybe they were doing morning services in Waterloo and then evening Sunday services in Cedar Falls, and I guess they flipped a coin midweek to see where they'd go to prayer meeting on Wednesday.
I'm so grateful for my parents and my grandparents going back to seven generations of Iowans who were all people of faith. I didn't have a relationship with Jesus Christ. They were right. And so I was going to a prayer meeting before school at our high school.
And you thought I was just kidding when I called it prayer meeting.
Going to a prayer meeting before school at our high school. We would go to that prayer meeting. My friends did a wonderful thing for me. They started praying for me. They started praying that I would come to know Jesus Christ. How many of you just love and appreciate praying friends? They're worth the world. And that changed me forever, and I'm so grateful for what God has done. And one thing that I've learned Philistines.
Took them down? They took down those Philistines? Well, first of all, we need to go, well, no, we'll just take it. We'll take it on faith that it's Philistines and not Edomites or Elamites or Moabites or Canaanites or any of the others that were slain by the all-loving God. But no, took them down. Michelle, honey, they were put to the sword. They were butchered. They were killed. But not in the name of Jesus Christ. You've got the wrong religion there, honey. They were killed in the name of Yahweh, Yahweh, you know, that guy. Jehovah. Yeah.
Jehovah, Jehovah.
But it's always fun when we get to story time with Michelle Bachman. Because she mentions Jonathan. I wonder if she's ever read that whole part about, you know, because Jonathan was the son of Saul, the king of Israel, the first king of Israel. And Jonathan palled around with David a lot. Palled around with, you know, that's one of those the Godzilla from Wasilla phrases. And if you read the story there, all you find out is that Saul became greatly wroth with David, and it doesn't say why. And David and Jonathan were like that, you know, really good friends, longtime companions.
And what was amazing is that Jonathan and his compatriot soldier took the entire army down. And it began with the courage of two young men who put their faith and their trust in an almighty God. And so that's my message for all of the young people here tonight. He is...
Go kill the Philistines? Well, no.
Powerful to save. He reaches out his hand to draw us to his side, and then he says, trust me. Give your life over to him now while there is yet time. Jesus Christ, trust him in all his ways. He is worthy to be trusted. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. So, just to be clear, that loving God who gave Jonathan the power to go down on an entire, I mean, take down an entire army, killed people because politicians are spending too much money. I don't know how much God has got.
I don't know how much God has got to do to get the attention of the politicians. We've had an earthquake. We've had a hurricane. He said, are you going to start listening to me here?
Yeah. Now, of course, her press flack is saying, obviously she was saying it in jest.
How the hell can you tell? Who likes wet people? Who likes white people? I want to live in the Waterloo, Iowa that John Wayne lived in, only it was John Wayne Gacy. And then the next thing you know, a dude's getting his skull crushed like a melon because people are hollering faggot at him.
Kind of Waterloo, Iowa.
How can you tell when she's joking? Not except for the fact that the idea of an America with a President Bachman is something that fills you and I with a sort of bowel-watering, sick dread.
And we know what an idiot she is. Well, I mean, and by that, I'm not trying to insult her. I mean idiot within the Clinical Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition, definition of idiot. We know that she's laying it on thick, and we know that she's running a, you know, she's doing her shtick. Right? But here's the important thing. If she was only joking there, how were her equally not terribly intelligent followers supposed to know? Is there a little lodge sign? Does she tug at her ear like Carol Burnett? Did the reporter just not do a good job of saying, uh, they know government is on a morbid obesity diet, and we've got to rein in the spending. And the reporter for St. Petersburg Times, which, of course, I'm sure has a lot of that liberal bias, just didn't bother to transcribe, and then she winked and stuck her elbow out and, you know, wiggled one toe and said, just kidding, only that didn't make it into the story. If it's all, here's the question. If that kind of bizarre Bible babble is all just joking, one, who is she mocking? Us or her God? And two, what does that say about someone who would make jokes about people being killed by hurricanes and ascribing it to a supreme deity? But it's all just a big joke. Because she's a big joker. Having been asked about her comments that God sent the hurricane to send America a message by killing innocent victims, she said,
our hearts and prayers go out to the families of the victims. This isn't something that we take lightly. My comments were not to be ones that were taken lightly.
See, it's that liberal. It's your fault. It's the liberal media's fault. It's because
you were taking them lightly. What I was saying in a humorous vein.
Wait, if it's in a humorous vein, doesn't that mean it's supposed to be taken lightly? Because it's a joke?
What I was saying in a humorous vein.
You know, that's the one that runs up right through your elbow. That's where the humorous is. You know.
Is that there are things happening that politicians need to pay attention to. It isn't every day we have an earthquake in the United States.
Dear Jesus, please don't make a bottle of Jim Beam appear in my tequila or in gin or anything appear in my hands right now, because I'm going to down it upright. My comments were not meant to be the ones that were taken lightly. What I was saying in a humorous vein is there are things happening that politicians need to pay attention to. You know what? I think there's some truth in that article I read last week. That remark from Richard Dawkins. Dr. Dawkins. To the extent that there, to the effect that there is something profoundly wrong with the political system of a country that will let a woman like this, not a woman, but a woman like this, get within even considering distance of the presidency of the United States of America. Betsy, ever the forgiving one, says, I don't have a problem with Michelle going to church in two towns. I go to different synagogues Friday night and Saturday, depending on what I'm doing professionally, who's having a bar mitzvah and so on. But a presidential candidate preaching like this? Oi! I have a big problem with that. But Betsy, it's not just that she was born in two places, too. I know, I understand the scenario that you're laying out, but she was born in two places. And that's got to hurt. Everybody involved. It's like it's some sort of damn road show. All right, we're done in Waterloo. Pack her back in. Let's get over to Cedar Falls. There are enough people who think, or, well, that's the closest approximation of a word we can... There are enough people who are on the same wavelength as Michelle Bachmann not to win an election, but certainly to screw a country. Well, Gene's in rare form tonight, too. Mm. My, my. Representative Bachman must have a very wide stance. Holy God, can you imagine the stirrups? Well, that would be for, yeah, Mrs. Bachman, Michelle's mother. Get her back in there, we're off to Cedar Falls. My God, if it plays there, we're on to Peoria. Hang on, Ethel. But how's this going to play, this idea that she... Well, again, it's dog whistling. Her followers, and the fundamentalists, and the dominionists, and the literalists, they know she wasn't joking. They believe in a hate-filled, vengeful God that smites innocent people to prove a point that, you know, Social Security is a cruel Ponzi scheme or some other mendacious piece of crap. Their God does that kind of thing. Because he can. You've read Job. Don't make me go over Job again. Basically, Job gets to the end of it after the boils, the locusts, the frogs, the killing off all of his children and afflicting him, and the heartbreak of psoriasis, and finally Job's, why? I'm the good guy, remember? And God answers from the whirlwind and says, because I can. Who the hell are you to ask me? With respect to being told about Jebus by Michelle Bachman, Clayton says, I can read about him myself. I don't need anyone to tell me about Jebus, let alone that one. Yeah, and there's so much, you know, there's so much more. It is more Ann Monday. And we got, oh, Jeebus, we do have more ands. I got one more Moran before we go, before we take a break. Oh, by the way, Michelle Bachman has said she would consider drilling in the Everglades for Earl oil. But while we're out there with the fundamentalists crazy, we've done a Protestant, let's make sure that we give the Roman Catholics their due. And their boy, Bro Fromix, Rick Santorum. You remember a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about his struggle to find a parable of why two guys who love each other should not be able to get married, or two women who love each other should not be able to get married. Well, the struggle continues. You remember he started out with the parable of the napkin, saying that a napkin is not a paper towel, and then he went to the parable of the water, and the water is not beer. Neither of those were working out, so he went for a cup of tea is not a basketball. That wasn't sinking in, so he went to a tree is not a car. Now, I got 2 minutes of Bro Fromix here, Rick Santorum. Well, you're just going to have to hear it to believe it. Sorry.
I said, this is a napkin. What is a napkin? This is a napkin. A napkin is what a napkin is. It isn't a paper towel. It isn't a car. You can call a napkin a car, but it doesn't make it a car. You can call a paper towel a chair, but it doesn't make it a chair.
Right.
Marriage is what marriage is. It existed before there was the English language or a state. It is something that was given to us from the very beginning of time. It is something universal in every culture. And it has been remarkably consistent in every culture. Why? Because it reflects nature and nature's God. Not only have I taken on the gay and lesbian community, but you may recall back in 2003, I believe it was, there was a case up before the United States Supreme Court. It's one that has made me famous in the gay and lesbian community. I shouldn't say famous. Infamous in the gay and lesbian community. It was called Lawrence versus Texas. I gave an interview about it before the case was decided. And I said, if the case is decided that says that this law is unconstitutional, the court says this law is unconstitutional because adults, consenting adults, have the right to sexual activity, any consensual activity.
then we will see not only marriage destroyed, but you will see ultimately the faith community destroyed and being ghettoized as bigots because they stand up and preach biblical truth. I said, if the Supreme Court says that you have the right to consensual sexual activity, then you have the right to incest, you have the right to polygamy, you have the right to all of these other sexual variations. And so the gay community said, he's comparing gay sex to incest and polygamy. How dare he do this? And they have gone out on a, and I would argue, jihad against Rick Santorum's system. Rick Perry said, it's fine with me. Michelle Bachman said, it's none of my business. Well, let me assure you, it's my business. It's all of our business.
I kind of wish whoever was cutting that audio would have let the clapping continue, because just to remind us that that wasn't just some guy at the end of the bar babbling away. Yeah, your love life, your attachment to another human being is Rick Santorum's business. Marriage or no marriage, it's his business. Does he set off your latency meter just a little bit? Just a little bit? These sexual variations. Isn't that one of those tawdry little magazines that all began, Dear Editor, I never thought it would happen with me and that girl in the... Right. Yeah. That's the stuff that's too racy for penthouse letters. Maura sent along a selection of the finer responses from the TPM Talking Points memo article about jihad. Jihad, really. You know, they have two fetishes, Muslims and gay people. And now Rick Santorum is at the point where he's conflating the two for greater effect. What? Considering that Santorum has a long history of spewing anti-gay nonsense, this is the fridge calling the stove Harvest Gold. Harvest Gold just slayed me. I prefer avocado. Remember the avocado? Yeah. It would appear, campaign-wise, that Rick Santorum is a one-dick pony. Ooh, that's good. Santorum has been getting a lot of practice lately, dragging around that big, heavy cross. Pretty soon he'll be able to take the little training wheels off and go full martyr. Who hasn't eyed a well-coiffed poodle and thought, there is a creature that needs my company. Let he who is without sin cast the first dog bone. I had a little cackle fest the first time through with that. Let he who is without sin. Harvest Gold. Jeebus. The Morans are, in fact, out in full flower, I guess, aren't they? Michael writing in from Sebastopol. Santorum. That little kid in the house. We don't talk about those things in front of tots. So, we go forward. Your calls are coming up next. A couple of lines yet open. You have the number 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. I was going to go for Rod Stewart's I Was Only Joking in honor of Michelle Bachman saying she was only joking, but... You know what? In a humorous vein, but it was—I checked it out. It was too downbeat. So instead, well, who knows? Dadgummit, she may be a pompous, and this most assuredly is the horn. And we'll be right back.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Of love. Some people call me Maurice, 'cause I speak of the pompousness of love.
Maybe that could be Marcus.
people talking about me, baby. Say I'm doing you wrong, doing you wrong. Well, don't you worry, baby, don't worry, 'cause I'm right here, right here, right here, right here at home. 'Cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. Music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I get my loving on.
Sandbox and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Two minutes past the hour, we go straightway to the phones in just a second. But a reminder, go to crmw.net, crmw.net, that is the Coal River Mountain Watch homepage. Avail yourself, if you can, of membership there. In becoming a member of Coal River Mountain Watch, if you have not already, you will thereby be a member of one of the most, if not the most, in-your-face, unapologetic, no-retreat, no-surrender organizations fighting for, struggling for essential human rights in Appalachia, and by extension, everywhere else. That exists. Membership is cheap. And you really will be part of the solution. CRMW.net. A couple of emails before we do go on to the phones. And let's run through here quickly. Ron and Raleigh noting, with regard to marriage, it's obvious that Bro Fromix has no knowledge of the history of marriage. From the beginning of time, the Israelites practiced polygamy for Yahweh's sake. Oh, and then there's all kinds of polyandries and matriarchies and linear families, and yeah, it has been remarkably consistent. You know, nobody. I guess nobody's ever explained to Rick Santorum that simply saying something doesn't make it so. By the way, Isaac let me know that there is, in fact, a Michelle Bachman memoir coming out in November. No word if it's going to be out in comic book form. That was hard to resist. A little something as well, a separate topic from Andy. He says, listening to some podcasts, you mentioned the PayPal, another data point. PayPal will not accept my debit card, so I had to abandon trying to use it. I sent you a small check. You can put it towards the matching snail mail contest you had going on. So in that case, we're done. In addition, yes, hallelujah, the matching is done. Thank you very, very kindly to all of you who matched John's offer. I have told Boss Man Wayne about it, and he will be tallying them up so that I can write back to John. In addition, Andy says, yes, PayPal is another way to wring more fees out of the citizenry, and its owner, eBay, is a great example of fascism in action by policy. The place that spawned Meg Whitman, ex-gubernatorial candidate of California. Andy says, I've met folks from eBay. None of them were from the U.S. It always bothers me with all the unemployment in the native population. Why would a company bring in foreign workers? Oh, I forgot. H-1Bs, which is what they were. Work for less. No problem. We're happy to be in America. PayPal and its parent are in the vanguard of the war against working people. Thanks, Andy. And I understand all of those problems. But we, too, have a problem. And the problem we have here is that everyone, without fail, I have yet to find one that does not charge 3%. Okay? That's basically $3 on the 100. Buck and a half on 50. 75 cents on 20, on 25, that kind of thing. Everybody, there are nonprofit transfers, transfer companies out there that deal with nonprofit organizations. I was surprised to find out, and I found this out last year, they charge $3 on 100. There's a little passage in Kurt Vonnegut's Sirens of Titan. No, it's not Sirens of Titan. It's well, it's either Sirens of Titan, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, or Breakfast of Champions. Might be Breakfast of Champions. But anyway, there's a lawyer who, there's an explanation by a lawyer that if one can dip one's finger into the stream of commerce and take a little bit during the transfer process, one can get very, very wealthy without ever having to do much of anything. And that is a model that is almost universal at this point. And without some means of electronic funds transfer, the horn can go away. I don't like them, but the thing is, there's no, to the best of my knowledge, no Sparkle Pony company out there that is ideologically pure enough that we could say, yay, us. So what we're trying to do is eventually just add more options. But there will be a transfer fee with all of them because they all charge one because it's an administration fee or whatever. You know how it goes. But, yeah, the guy who founded PayPal is a lunatic libertarian who wants to form little Ayn Rand islands. I saw a tweet earlier today that goes back to Hurricane Irene that noted that came from a teabagging, you know, fiscal conservatism, John Galt, you know, Atlas Shrugger, who was tweeting while standing in line waiting for free sandbags from the government. And we're probably absolutely clueless to the irony of all of that. Email came in also from our buddy John in upstate New York. The blog on Washington Post is rapidly turning into a great source. Bachman Crazy Overdrive, BCO. Bachman Crazy Overdrive now says the hurricane was God's punishment for the late D.C.'s shenanigans. A few things. First, isn't she as a politician part of that problem? Why, yes, John, yes. Second, couldn't allegedly all-powerful God smite a bit more selectively? Why kill, in this case, two children in order to punish recalcitrant politicians? Yeah, well, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways. Mysterious? How about mean and stupid? Third, of course, is this dead end of blame and responsibility that we've talked about before. If we think that God judges and punishes and fixes all that's wrong, then we on earth are absolved of any need to right the wrongs. I find it a repulsive philosophy. I agree with you, John. It's along the same lines as somebody who still uses that very, very hateful word in Mississippi, going to see the help and saying, see, that's how it was, but it's not that way anymore, and it's all better, and it's fixed, and we don't have to worry about it no more. It's the same principle. Jenny just wrote in and said, Bob, instead of 30 people at $10, I thought maybe 10 people at $30, so I sent in my 30. Thanks for going to D.C. for all of us. Thank you, Jenny. Otherwise known as Polka Fan in the chat room. That would work equally well. Ten people at $30, it works every bit as well as 30 people at $10. I'm just trying to, 60 people at $5. However we can make it go. I'm sorry your call dropped, Susan. When a line opens up, hopefully you can get back in.
Hey.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita.
Michelle Bachman also for lowering minimum wage.
Why am I not surprised?
That's very Christian of her, ain't it?
Well, isn't it? Now, okay, let's go through this real quick, Juanita. Isn't there that parable out there that says that a man hired a man in the morning for an amount, and he hired a man at noon for an amount, the same amount, and he hired a man, and at the end of the day, the guy came back and said, hey, wait a minute, that guy got paid for two-thirds less of the work that I did for the same money.
Yeah.
I never understood. What does that parable mean?
I can't tell you, Bob. I have to think about it. I don't know.
I think it's meant to illustrate the fact that all shall be equal in the kingdom of God or something, but it certainly isn't an accurate representation of fairness on earth.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't hear the first part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
I was in and out. And I wonder if you got any of the hurricane.
No. All we got was a gentle breeze in late August that was unseasonably pleasant.
Yeah. Well, you know, now they're saying it was big hype.
Yeah, and they're saying that Barack Obama tried to terrify America.
Yeah.
How about trying to get America? Well, I mean, you live in hurricane country. You know what happens when people don't prepare, right?
Yeah.
They die.
When I was growing up, when I was little and all, and was growing up, and we had some hurricanes, and we would listen. You know, they're complaining about the coverage too, but we would listen to the radio till the batteries or whatever we had. The electricity would go off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Till we couldn't.
And then the batteries eventually go out too.
Yeah. But I listened to that, and they did do some repeating. But did you see what happened to Vermont?
Oh, it was awful.
They said every road in the state is affected.
And, of course, Eric Cantor says too bad for Vermont because, you know, Eric Cantor hates Vermont because they've got that communist medicine socialized up there and stuff, right?
Well, yeah, and they got those communist people up there, too. Bernie Sanders and so forth. But
well, and but you know, it's not just Eric Cantor. Is Ron Paul on something, Juanita? I mean, here's a man. I mean, let's just for background's sake, here's a man whose congressional district includes Galveston, Texas.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Now this guy says he wants to go back to 1900, when we all took care of each other, and that FEMA is a drag on the budget. But he specifically said 1900, Juanita, and that's very important in this discussion.
I heard him, yeah.
Now, in 1900, the worst hurricane ever to hit the United States came ashore at Galveston.
Yeah.
It killed between 6,000 and 12,000 human beings.
Yeah.
We still don't know for sure how many. And that is what Ron Paul wants to go back to? You know, I've got an email from one of those weird right-wing emails asking me to interview somebody who is pushing the idea that Democrats should switch over and be Republicans in the primary and go and vote for Ron Paul. I mean, could you get a Democrat? I don't know. Maybe you could. Could you get a Democrat to go vote for somebody that likes it when 6,000 to 12,000 people die in a hurricane? I mean, that just makes my eyeballs roll back in my head and go, you know, because.
Well, we'll see how many more Republicans come out repeating what he said. I'm sorry, I'm stuttering, but. But, you know, Rubio?
Yeah.
From Florida?
Yeah, Mark Rubio, the teabagger.
Did you hear his little speech about Social Security?
Oh, no.
Well, he said that it was to discourage people and, we needed to go back to where, you know, people helped one another out. Well, I can remember where people helped one another out, but they couldn't afford to pay all their bills and give them a standard of my month. You know what I'm saying?
I sure do.
But they got that kind of it, and When he was running for election, he was talking about how, you know, his folks came from Cuba and how Social Security really helped them out, the parents and all, you know.
But we've just outgrown it now. Is that what it is?
I don't know, but see, you know. And they're going to really come out with trying to say that when we passed Obamacare, you know what they call it, they took out millions or billions from the program, and they're going to try to make people believe that. And you know how they do. They just keep repeating it.
You know how I don't know if you've noticed this or not. You want to know how stupid some American people are, Juanita. The United States Postal Workers Union is having to run ads right now just telling people, and for the most part, you've got to figure it's teabaggers they're talking to, hey, your taxes don't pay to run the postal service, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Because apparently teabaggers don't like the post office. For heaven's sakes! I mean, doesn't that just make you want to the post office?
Yeah,
really?
It does. Yeah, it's amazing. And
I mean, because these clowns these teabaggers and whatever, I guess they've never actually priced what it costs to send a letter via Federal Express or UPS.
Yeah.
or any of those other companies.
Oh, yeah, I know. Or anything.
You know what? I had to do that one time, and I did it. And I was out like $20.
Yeah.
And I vowed that day that I would never complain about the price of United States Postal Service postage again so long as I live, and I haven't.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
really...
Even what it is now, you know.
Yeah, but that's the point. Even if it's 60 cents a stamp,
yeah,
that's still something like, what, $9.40 less than what it would cost to send it
yeah
3 days that's with UPS?
Way over, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that was what I wanted to tell you the other day about Rubio. And, you know, he's Jeb's bad boy or whatever you want to call
anointed
him.
One or...
Yeah, but old Jeb, you know, he'll get his finger in the pie. You know, if they ever make him vice president, well, to whoever's president.
Yeah, stay off small aircraft.
He might go hang himself.
Oh, don't joke.
Yeah, I shouldn't, because sometimes I say something and joke, and then it'll come true. I guess that's superstition, right?
Sometimes it's observation of known phenomena.
But the hurricane, one thing I wanted to say about that, and this is bad of me to say this, but I think a lot of people might think of it. You know how many people called in and said, well, those people in New Orleans should have left. They should have gone to some place, safe place. I wonder how many people who got into this hurricane deal might not have prepared or couldn't prepare. You know, it costs money. I heard somebody on TV talking about how much money it might cost you to go somewhere else. And did you see those senior citizens? I think they were in New Jersey, and they were going to ride it out because the alternative. Did you see that?
I did.
And the alternative was they didn't know where they would go, what would be there. And I know too many times where you go, and it's kind of like a mini dome, you know, like it was in New Orleans. Like many domes, you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
you
I do.
Get a bunch of people packed in a place, and how many people have decent toilet habits, you know? And how many of the
in circumstances like that, the real
a bunch of people.
The real test of people is in circumstances like that. For instance, during the Fukushima disaster, which continues to unfold in Japan, Japanese social structure held up because of the way it is, as it was explained to us by, among others, you know, Robert there in Japan.
Yeah.
Social structures held up because of the depth and focus of them. The United States, no. Things fall apart real fast because we are a self-centered nation. Me, right?
Yeah. But there's a lot of reasons why sometimes you can't go. Now, I know out where I live, heavy crime area, but of course the whole country is. I have people say, why did you move from there? Well, I'm used to this place. This is my home, you know.
Right. It's the difference between the devil. It's the difference between the devil you know and the devil you don't.
And you could go to these gated communities And there's plenty of crime going on there. Not just among the residents, but people that go in and out. You always have somebody going in and out of those places.
Certainly. Certainly, without a doubt.
And anyway, a lot of times, you know, and I know that it's bad when you get and the water gums up over to your eyeballs, you know, which that happens sometimes and has happened. I want to tell you something before I forget, and then I'll shut up.
Oh, yeah.
I found out Yahoo, I caught them in a lie, on their front page, reporting on the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was watching, I stayed up and watched that till it started repeating a bunch of stuff. But anyway, they were talking about, they had, like it was news, that the hurricane had hit New York City, and they had high winds and flooding and all. Well, that was about 3 hours before it did hit New York City. And it did.
They had it pre-written
for. They didn't have the winds. Yeah. And they didn't have the winds. They had the flooding. But they didn't have the high winds like they reported. And they reported before it even went there.
Right. You know, just getting things out of the way, making you right.
So, whatever you read on Yahoo News, sometimes it ain't correct.
Or they get a little ahead of themselves.
Yeah, well, that was a little bit ahead of their set. But.
Or perhaps a lot ahead of themselves.
Yeah. Okay, well, one more thing I wanted to ask you. I've been thinking about this because I was asked a question on a survey. What would I do to cut down government spending? And, you know, I was coming to the conclusion, what do we need the Congress for?
Now, see, the first place I go is the Pentagon.
Well, that's a good.
What do we need a military that costs as much as the
trillions?
Well, no, that costs as much as the number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 militaries combined.
Oh yeah. Well, my reasoning on the Congress is that most of them, if they're Republicans, they want to take away everything they can from us. If they're Democrats, they don't want nothing to change, and so they'll go along with the Republicans because they don't want to fight. We have a few, very few, and I can't even think of them now except the Black Caucus. I'm in the Black Caucus, and not all of them. And the Senate, enough said, Bernie Sanders.
That's about it.
And that's about it. Well, I'm going to let you go, Bob.
All right. Well, you have.
And you're not going to be there. You're not going to be on air tomorrow night?
No, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, I'm not there.
Okay. And I do want to say to Tracy that I like Maxine Waters, too. And if she goes to Washington and meets her, tell her that there's one Southern gal that appreciates those people in the Black Caucus that do stand up for we the people.
Well, I have, you know what, I feel the same way. There's very few people in the Congress I feel like actually represent our interests. And, I got no problems with Maxine Waters. And I got, I consider her in the same light that I consider Dennis Kucinich. Formerly Alan Grayson when he was in there. There is a small handful of others as well.
Yeah. And they say what they want to about us, but even the Blue Dogs, oh, they just think Alan Grayson's terrible.
Yeah, he's mean.
But anyway, that, and also tell her that also Cornel West is one of my heroes.
Okay. Well, maybe she may be listening, although it's my understanding she's also in, she's in San Francisco this week. I saw a tweet a few minutes ago that she's in San Francisco, Tracy is. I saw her tweeting a few minutes ago that she was in some sort of, some sourdough bakery or something, and I immediately felt terribly, terribly jealous.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. You have a good night, Juanita.
Okay. Good night.
We'll talk soon. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Juanita calling from Central Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, that speech that Bachman did was recent, right? Because she did say she's also running for president.
Yeah, I mean,
how the hell, I mean, okay, is this a just sort of an exercise in, you know, speaking to her so-called base, and then she plans on distancing herself from this? I mean, because it's an outrage that some candidate for political office in this country is up there talking about, you know, Jesus and God. And I mean, it's too much. I couldn't even believe I was hearing that. It was way, way too much.
You know what? That's even way out there past George W. Bush, isn't it?
Well, yeah, no, it's just, no, it's ridiculous. I mean, she's, I'm speechless because between her and that other freak, the more I see of this Perry person, the more I'm like, are you kidding me with this? And again, no wonder Texas is in the state that it's in. Good Jesus. They've had a decade of this freak?
And remember, before that, they had a decade of W.
Yeah, no, but the thing is with the Perry, I mean, just the outright lies that are never challenged. I mean, this man is talking about Social Security is some sort of cruel Ponzi scheme, or it's unconstitutional, and blah, blah, blah. And it's just kind of like, these people never address, you know, what do you expect to replace it with? Because you sure the hell aren't going to allow all the millions of people, a third of them who are not old, to not have access to this insurance program. You may disagree with me, but even if the Republicans come into power, they are not going to get rid of those programs. Mark my word. Now, they may cut every program for the poor, because doing anything for the poor is okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
But they're not going to destroy. I don't believe it. I don't know what game they're running, but there's too many Republicans who get the program. You see, who get these programs. That's the thing that I'm constantly looking at now. It's just like, no, you know, I don't know who they're talking to, because anyone who pays any attention to the budget of the U.S. government knows that the vast majority of it are these insurance programs and the military. That's it. The rest of it is so small that, you know what I'm saying? So I'm starting to get really confused, because I don't care if Obama loses and these other people all come in. There's no way. Because what are they going to do with the millions of people who are going to lose that transfer payment? I'm just talking to you. I'm not talking to you as a partisan or nothing. I'm talking.
No.
How is the country going to function when the reality of what the U.S. government is what I just described?
My only, and I'm going to respond to you, Sandra, not as a partisan. My only response is that I think you are predicating your query on what may turn out to be, I would like to be wrong about this, but you may be starting from a false premise. And I maintain that you kind of are, because I don't think that these people actually want a government. I don't think Rick Perry was kidding when he was talking secession.
Well, okay, no, I understand, but what I'm saying is that when they come up against what they're actually talking about doing, you know, the actual mechanics and, you know, taking apart these three safety net programs or these three insurance programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. I'm not saying I want to wait around to see how they pull it off, but I'm a bit skeptical now because of how these programs came into be, how long they've been in place, how the money is generated, i.e. this tax that all workers have to pay. You know, I don't know. I'm not saying it's like their abortion argument, the same thing where they would never want to ban abortion because it's too good to them in the electoral process. You know what I mean?
Right.
Likewise, I can't, you know, because there's too many white people who depend, I'm sorry, I'm going there, too many white people who depend on these programs. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So, I'm quite happy to hear your explanation, you know, but I'm just really starting to be a little bit curious about how their dogma is going to translate into
these
programs.
This could be one of those situations, Sandra, where they're finding out how difficult it is to serve two masters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is, I read an article over the weekend, I think it was over at Truthout, that said it was something like the history of hating Social Security or something like that. And it was really quite an educational experience because, it, among other things, it put the assaults on Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid in perspective over time. And it showed the genesis of these think tanks making arguments about eliminating it.
Yeah.
And so when you consider the amount of money that flows through those things and the amount of clout that they now have via whether it be 527s or, you know, just outright Citizens United money.
Yeah.
They say they want an end to it, so these people who are beholden to them have to give lip service to that.
Okay. I understand, but there's also, if you look at the marketplace for these programs, I mean, how many millions of people, I mean, businesses and whatnot, are sustained by these programs? You understand what I'm saying? It's like they say one thing about what government ain't, but we know what it is, and they goddamn it know what it is, too. This is what I mean about the disingenuousness of it. Give me a goddamn break.
Oh, look, yeah, no more scooter chair ads on cable TV, because those companies go away.
No more
Wilfred Brimley hustling diabetic supplies.
And nursing homes. Hello, they're all privatized. I'm sure they have an interest group to bark for them. You see what I'm saying? I just think that, now don't get me wrong, I think every program, including Pell Grants, any sort of program to help poor people could be just wiped away if these people get into power. Now, I'm quite happy to assume that that is the goal, because poor people, the next stop is jail. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, that's the dirt.
Yeah, death or jail. They don't give a F about poor people. And I think that is the case. But these, you know, what's left of the middle class, and these old people and people's parents and, maybe people who are disabled who depend on these insurance programs, and I refuse to call them anything else now but insurance programs.
Well, they're damn sure not entitlement programs.
Right. It's just a joke, you know, because there is a dedicated stream in case they seem to forget that. Once again, people like Rick Perry is like, bitch, what you talking about? People pay into this shit on the hour, every hour. What are you talking about? It's a Ponzi scheme. You see what I mean? I'm just sort of, and I don't mean to sound.
Well, among other things, it displays the fact that Rick Perry doesn't have the first damn clue what a Ponzi scheme is.
Oh God! But anyway, I don't know. I just am sort of, I'm just trying to look at the landscape, because see, I have to sort of consider the real possibility that the Democrats are going to lose all three branches, because I don't really see what Obama is going to do to help himself out. I don't know. I could be wrong.
You mean like the big job speech that's coming?
Well, that's not going to be anything, because he, along with his other people who are left in his administration, they don't, I think they, you know, we've heard people admit they don't believe that a government job is a job. They believe that, too. And so, you know, you're like, yikes. If you're hearing that kind of rhetoric from the so-called Democratic administration, then the hopes of a real sort of jump start for jobs, well, you know.
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, I think.
No, that, well, and that was my point. This is not going to be some sort of tomorrow I'm signing legislation to create the WPA and the CCC speech.
Right. And, you know, and I also look at how he's handling any little pushback to the banks. I mean, he's doing his best to represent his main constituency, which is seems to be the banks. I just read, which I think is interesting, that the FDIC is now objecting to this other $8.5 billion settlement that Bank of America is trying to shove down their investors, you know, who are suing them. And this lawsuit would allow them to pay off the investors that have been scammed through Countrywide. You know Countrywide, right?
Right, right.
Okay, well, anyway, the FDIC has come down saying, oh, no, we're not down with this. So Bank of America is under assault from all sides. They just got a pick-me-up from Buffett. Kind of like what he did for Goldman Sachs, you know, he's just put in like $5 billion or some madness. But they just sold half of their holdings in their Chinese concern. So they're in big trouble, and we're in trouble because that's one of those too big to fail things, right?
Right.
So anyway, I'm just, you know, I just don't know what Obama is going to be running on. You know, we have a ways to go. I'm confused and, you know, concerned about, well, really, what's the deal? Do you think people will be so freaked out by Rick Perry if he's the candidate that they'll just be like, oh, no, and run back to Obama in droves? Is that what we're hoping for?
That's a piss-poor political strategy if it is. I always took Senator Byrd's words to heart. He told me once, he said, there's only two ways to run a campaign, unopposed and scared stiff. And that's the truth. You got to run like you acknowledge the possibility that you will lose. And these polling numbers that came out last week, you know, one poll does not an election make, but Obama was leading Rick Perry by 2 points.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's sort of, you know, you can either be sort of swayed by the Obama supporters and other people like Jonathan Alter, or that other freak Baghdad Bob.
Yeah.
Ezra Klein. You know, they're all trying to write as if, oh, Obama don't have a choice. This is the best he can do line. That bullshit. Which is fantasy world. Because it's like, well, no, that's not what people are concerned about. They don't give a F about that. They are saying that they don't have jobs. Like every other election. So they seem to think they're going to be able to run around that. And for the life of me, Bob, I can't understand where they're coming up with this calculus. How is it different from any other election ever in history when unemployment was really high? How is this going to be any different?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm asking you because I'm just...
No, I don't know because, what is it, 9 out of 13 don't end well.
Right, and you know, we're way above the 7%. That had Reagan scream like a madman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and as far as what will they do, my understanding, or well, not understanding, my low opinion of American political perspicacity, if you will, says this, Sandra. And that is that as long, and this has certainly been the messaging, hasn't it? As long as they promise the people who are on the program now or will be in the next 5 years that they won't be touched, they can screw the rest of us all the way into the sheetrock.
Well, there is that. Although, you know, I'm still, like I said, because it's a generational program, I'm still confused. But I'm also, you know, this is the other problem with Obama is that, well, once again, maybe if someone hideous got in like Perry, you would get the proper mobilization on the progressive side like they did against Bush.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, everybody will all be friends again if there's a Republican in the White House.
Well, if that's the case, that could be something that could stop the destruction of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, whereas if Obama is reelected, forgive me, he could just go ahead and finish the programs off. Now, I hate to say that, but remember what I said to you before. You know, it might be hellish what you wish for when this man ain't got no constraint.
You know what? Let me expand on that for just a minute, if I may. Is there anybody out there? And I'm not trying to be a jackass, but is there anybody out there that sees Joe Biden running for the presidency of the United States in 2016, assuming that Barack Obama is reelected? Is there anybody that see? Because I don't. So that means it's going to be a wide open field in 2016, and this adds on to your argument that he has absolutely nothing to constrain him.
And also remember what he said years ago about entitlement reform is huge on his own priority.
Number one.
Forget that bullshit.
Number one.
People out there shouldn't forget it because, you know, as you're scrambling around making sure that one of these freaks don't get into power, watch out if he gets back in office. And I know I've contradicted myself in this conversation because I am freaked out by the prospect of those Republicans being in control of everything. But I'm also freaked out in this Nixon goes to China shit that could be on.
Well, see, I was about to really annoy you with that because that's what scares me because let's just look at this from a historical perspective thing. What is the health care bill that got put through, the Affordable Care Act? What is that except for a very lightly tinkered with version of the same damned bill that Bob Dole offered to counter so-called Clinton Care or Hillary Care or whatever they were calling it in 1992. You remember that?
Yeah, and it's taken straight from the Heritage Foundation, too. That's another thing about
yes,
this,
yes.
You know, so when Obama was flirting and torturing or taunting us or teasing us with the public option, it was like, oh, whatever, this is just, you know, just for the hippies.
But I do remember, Sandra, that during the primary process, there were a number of people out there who were saying, listen, Hillary's health care plan is a lot closer to what we want than what his is.
Well, exactly. No, and it's just kind of like, you know, the public option went away right away. And then we were presented with this Heritage third way mesh of madness that we're getting. And, you know, I don't know what that's going to be.
And see, that if you look at Afghanistan, if you look at Guantanamo, if you look, there's a number of places. And I don't want any of the diehard Obama supporters to say, see, he doesn't love him like he ought to. No, these are just facts that there are a number of places within this presidency, Sandra, where Barack Obama has actually carried on and carried out the plans of the Bush administration.
Exactly. And I remember
very well January of 2005 when George W. Bush said, I just won me some political capital, and I'm going to spend it. And the first thing he said he was going to spend it on was, yeah, the privatization of Social Security.
And you saw the mobilization like you never did before, and that shit was stopped. Now, we've already had a taste of how the left and the Democrats respond to Obama's actions, and that's not really...
Right, and that's what scares me. If Bush privatization of Social Security 2.0 beta comes out in, say, January 2013. Well, I'm pretty secure in saying that there is an element within the Democratic Party, and there's a word for them, and I'm not going to use it because I respect their opinions and I like them. But they're going to respond by calling us hippies for objecting to. Well, look, maybe it'll work out to put young workers Social Security in the stock market.
Oh yeah, no, and don't forget. And I remember this too. You know, you follow away these little statements and you think, what the? But that whole statement when Obama was talking about entitlements, and he's had the nerve to mention the, you know, vaguely and kind of not straightforward, but he suggested that, well, maybe people like him don't need it. Bingo.
Right. So what's the harm in a little means testing?
Right. And that's the end of it. everyone understands, not everyone, I'm saying in our little family here, when they means test the program in this country, that means it's for people who are poor or who can't get anything else. Thus, the program is marginalized and easy to finish off.
Right, and what will begin as rational means testing will proceed through Republican machinations to become really mean means testing.
Right, and the whole idea of the genius of the program that Roosevelt and his people came up with was everyone in, nobody out. I'm quite happy for Warren Buffett to get his fucking Medicare and Social Security. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I want him to have it. I want him to have it.
I don't have a problem with it.
I want Rockefellers on Social Security.
Ayn Rand. That bitch got it. Good for her.
Yeah.
Everybody in, nobody out.
See, maybe that's the fundamental disconnect that people like you and me and the rest of the Horn family have, Sandra, is that we look at these things in a way that other people don't or can't or won't. And that, I mean, you know, food stamps. You know what? I want everybody to have food stamps. Medicare, I want everybody to have Medicare. Social Security, I want everybody to have Social Security. I mean, I because you know what? If you're raising two kids and you're making $45,000 a year in America, you ain't eating steak every night either.
Well, you know, and I know we've had this discussion before, but you know, the biggest barrier to the expanding of the social safety net, even when the marginal tax rate was 91%, is, like I said before, the, quote, diversity of the country, i.e., we don't want the niggas to get it, so it ain't going to happen. Because you don't have that problem in all the other OECD countries. Their safety net covers the whole of the population. The problem in this country is that there's so much hatred for various groups, gays, blacks, whoever, that they just can't find it in themselves to extend this shit to everybody. So we say that it's a market, the magic of the marketplace, and all other sort of excuses. But the biggest problem is that they don't, you know, they don't think certain people is deserving of it. I'm sorry, that's what it comes down to. That's why it's not here in this country. That's what I think. I think that that explains everything about a good explanation for why we don't have single payer. You know, even Nixon believed in a minimum income. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And, you know, Andy just wrote in from Redwood City, Sandra, and he said, tell Sandra, President Obama calls Social Security and Medicare an entitlement. It doesn't matter what we or you or us call it. So the term is now well respected in the corporate media, among corporatists, and the Blue Dogs, DLC, Friends of the Chicago School. If these two programs, Andy says, are entitlements, then by definition, all private insurance companies are running entitlement programs. You pay a premium, have a contract, and expect that contract to be honored when you submit a claim or the policy matures. But hell, says Andy, Mr. Obama has put these programs on the chopping block and facilitates the Republican Karl Rove talking points with his use of the word entitlement.
Well, the problem is that people don't understand. I mean, when I hear entitlement, I can understand that it sounds like, well, yeah, I paid into it, so I'm entitled to it. That's the connection I make.
Right.
But we know what they're turning it into. That's why I refuse. I have to use insurance. Because if I say entitlement to people I'm talking to, they take the Karl Rove definition. Because that's what's been
Welfare.
Pounded into the heads of people. You know, they don't, when they hear entitlement, they don't make the connection that, listen, you dumbass, you weren't paid into it, so you're entitled to it. They can't seem to be, I don't know if it's bad education. I don't know what it is, Bob. You know me. I'm the last little snob. You know it's true. So, you know, it's like, you know, what the fuck? Make